from Luke's Gospel. Once in Royal David City, we've sung that, we've thought a little bit about this town, Bethlehem, in the songs. There's lots of songs, and I see a lot of Christmas cards seem to feature Bethlehem as well, don't they? It tends to be blue. I don't know why. The cards tend to be blue, and there seems to be little domed roofs and little windows with twinkling lights inside. And generally speaking, I think my picture of Bethlehem from the Christmas cards is that it's a really picturesque little town. It's beautiful, actually, and there's a star in the sky above it, and the sky is blue, and the houses look blue in the evening light. And there are these little twinkling lights, and it's Bethlehem, Bethlehem. There's something moving about Bethlehem, isn't it? But let's get one thing straight about Bethlehem. Nobody opened the door in Bethlehem to a young woman at full term, ready to deliver her child, who just made a huge journey across the country in the most difficult of circumstances, in the middle of what clearly was a political and administrative nightmare. People had been summoned from all around the world to report to their towns, and you can see from the fact there was no room in the inn that little provision had been made, little foresight had been made, not that we'd ever experienced anything like that, like Westbury train station being closed at Christmas time or anything like that. Administrative problems don't happen, but there it was, in Bethlehem, evidently under-resourced to deal with the mass influx of people travelling. And in the crush, in the throng of people, there is this very, very vulnerable woman and her husband. And they come to the town, and in that little blue town with its little domes and its little twinkly lights and the stars above, not one door. Not one door open to let them in. I love a nativity play like anybody, you know. There's always the character, isn't there, of the innkeeper. But he's a kindly sort, isn't he, the innkeeper? He finds a spot for the family to come in. And there's a little barn, and it's quite cozy. And there's always a rosy light, isn't there, in the barn. But the fact is, the innkeeper is not in the scriptures. And the Bible is everything we know about what took place at that time, on that night. And so we don't really know whether there really was this kindly innkeeper at all. What we do know is there was no room at the inn either. Did you also notice that Joseph was of the house of David, and Bethlehem is called the city of David? In other words, this is his hometown. He's coming home. He's coming home to be with his people. And his people are not opening the door to him. Now, in a culture where hospitality is exceptionally important, highly esteemed, for nobody to open a door, there must be something going on. And of course, it could be just the busyness. Christmas does get busy. It could be just that the throngs of people and the administrative chaos and people preoccupied with their own lives or whatever. And maybe it wasn't a deliberate hardness of heart or indifference, but the fact is, no single door opened in Bethlehem. Not one single door for a young woman, possibly really a young woman about to deliver a baby. And surely we should come away with an impression of Bethlehem that is a little bit less favorable than the depictions that sometimes might come our way. Just a personal reflection on my growing up and Christmas. I'll tell you how Christmas was for me. I don't want to dwell on myself particularly, but just to say this, that sadly, my parents divorced when I was about 4 years old. And Christmas, for me, was the annual argument. You talk about people beginning to dread Christmas around September. Because around September, October, the conversation began. Who was having the children at Christmas? And so my parents would begin this war of attrition that would continue for several months. they loved us, and they were wonderful people in all sorts of ways. Don't mean to, but the fact was, it was painful and difficult, and in the end, really, our appetite for Christmas had been almost extinguished by the time that the occasion actually arrived. All we wanted was, in a way, to kind of dive into the material benefits and our presents and all the rest of it, because we were just being pulled this way and that way and this day and that way, and there was really very little peace at this festival of peace and blue skies and little blue houses and little windows with twinkly lights on the inside and the stars all above and the warm stable. In fact, we felt like the parcels ourselves sometimes, I think. But the fact is, isn't it, the advertising and the cards and have you weighed up all the Christmas adverts yet? You've been judging which you think is your favourite Christmas advert. It's begun, hasn't it, all the different stores and yeah, they're putting it at Amazon, all these sort of people have got their Christmas adverts. And in the main, they tend to hold up a kind of picture of Christmas, a fantasy of Christmas, with everybody, all the members of the family there, and that nobody's lacking, and that everybody's got plenty to eat and wonderful presents, and everybody's smiling, and it's just, there's a brass band playing in the back. It's wonderful. And it ramps up expectations, doesn't it, about what it's like. But I think it's the reality of life. Things go wrong. That was all planned. You understand that, don't you? It was all carefully planned. But, you know, somebody I know grew up in a home where his father was a very, very serious alcoholic. And you know, that kind of environment, growing up year by year, has a terrible, harsh effect on people growing up. And although he probably did his utmost, I'm sure, to resist following on in the footsteps, I think it can create a kind of cycle. And he himself, in his teens, really started to drink and drink heavily, and found he couldn't stop, and was a terrible alcoholic for years and years and years and years and years. But came to a place where he resolved he was going to stop. He was going to stop drinking, which is a wonderful thing, really something to rejoice in. But this Christmas is going to be the first Christmas. Now, he's sober. He's been sober for a few months now, and this is his first Christmas. What anxieties must he be experiencing at this time as he approaches Christmas time? When, I mean, the shops, everything's cheap, and the beer's cheap, and the wine's cheap, and the whiskey's cheap, and it's everybody's drinking, and this is like a test, and the test is coming, and there's nothing you can do about it. Here it comes, and I've got to get through. I've got to get through these next few days, and it's still Christmas, though, isn't it? It's still Christmas. That's going to be his Christmas. And you can wonder what Christmas, that first Christmas, was like for the baby Jesus coming, being born in Bethlehem. I talked about the indifference in Bethlehem, the apparent indifference, whether they were hard-hearted or just too busy, I don't know, but that lack of warmth, that lack of openness, during the Christmas time, I was thinking about it. So we don't really know whether he was we know the inn was closed, we know it was full, we know that nobody's home was opened up to him, and we know that he was laid in a manger, which is, of course, what cattle or animals have their hay put in, food for the animals. We know that much. And it may be that manger was connected to the inn, because they come quite close together in the text. And if that is the case, then probably what these inns had, people travelled from afar, and they travelled on donkeys or they travelled on horses, and you had to feed them the hay, and it was a bit like refuelling. It's like a petrol station, right? So you had to refuel your horse, so you gave them loads of hay, and it refuelled the horse. Ignore that. As I said, things go wrong. This is all planned, okay? This is all planned. But, so I was trying to think what the actual modern equivalent of what the modern equivalent of So if you've got an inn in that time, and then you've got a manger outside for the horses, in nowadays, you call an inn a pub, wouldn't you? And the bit outside where you bring your transport, where you park your transport, is called a car park, isn't it? I think the modern equivalent was a pub car park. So where was Jesus born? If he was born, it looks like he, if he was connected to the inn, it might be the equivalent that Jesus was born in a pub car park, or the equivalent thereof. Now, I don't know about you, but if I heard that somebody came from this town and had gone away and was working away and came back to this town and was heavenly pregnant and expecting a baby and nobody opened the door, and that woman ended up giving birth to her child in the corner of a pub car park, I would be horrified. I would be scandalized. It would get in the press, wouldn't it? It would be a scandal that something like that would happen. But it seems that something like that was Jesus' experience. What I'm trying to do is I'm kind of working around with you here is this, is that sometimes children are born and they're born, you get Siamese twins and they get born and their two bodies are connected to each other, aren't they? And brilliant, brilliant surgeons are brought to bear on the problem and they manage to separate these two children one from another so they can live independent lives. And I think with Christmas, we've got the myth of Christmas and we've got the reality of Christmas. And I think they get joined together. And we really need to separate these two from one from another. So we know what's the myth and we can enjoy it as a myth. But we stay real. What really happened at Christmas? What really happens in our lives? What our families are like? What our health situation is like? What our lives really, really are like? Because that really is Christmas, where the reality of who Jesus is and what he did and the reality of who we are, when those two things connect, that's Christmas. That really is Christmas. And that has a lot more to do with what we read about in the Bible. And the myths and the stories and the added bits and stuff like that. Well, take it or leave it. But they are separate, separate things. And Christmas comes round. And if you've been declared bankrupt, you don't stop being bankrupt for 24 hours over Christmas. Or if you've been divorced, if you've lost somebody, it doesn't change, does it? Christmas comes irrespective. If your health's broken, it doesn't suddenly mend because it's Christmas time. If you've lost your job, you don't suddenly get employed just because it's Christmas. And people are lonely. Loneliness is one of the biggest problems in our nation at this time. And they're lonely whether it's Christmas or whether it's not Christmas. And it is comforting. You've brought the point out very clearly already this evening. You know, Jesus was rejected. Jesus was despised. Jesus suffered. Jesus understood these things. He was threatened. There was jealousy over the gifts that he was given. A jealous king went after him. A hard-pressed family. Let's keep Christmas real, shall we? Let's keep Christmas real and keep Jesus real at the heart of Christmas too. Now, that's all a bit of a shadow, isn't it? And I want to say something else because that's not the whole story. It's not the whole story. Because in the record we had here, we also heard about the shepherds, didn't we? And let's just remember. Now, these people didn't know Jesus from Adam. They didn't know Mary. They didn't know Joseph. But when it came to it, they were there, weren't they? Don't you thank the Lord for the people who are just, they're there. You know, there's all sorts of people who aren't there. There's all sorts of people who shut the door. There's all sorts of relationships that don't work out as we might hope them to. And then there's these other people who just kind of just show up and you don't know who they are necessarily or where they've come from, but they become to you like the most important people in the world. They love you. People who just love you. And I don't know much about these shepherds. You know, we like to dress up in a tea towel and get a stick and all the rest of it, don't we? And we don't know whether a shepherd in those times were impoverished people out on the hillside or whether they were wealthy local farmers having a talk one. We just don't know about their situations in life, but we do know they showed up. We do know they had more vision than the people living in the town who were seemingly so preoccupied they missed the person of Jesus who'd come amongst them. They saw him. They went to him. And don't you thank God for people who actually see you and hear you and want to be with you? And it may not be the people that you grew up with. It may not be family members or friends, but they're there. And it has to be said as well, Jesus was given by God two of the most wonderful people, Joseph and Mary, whatever you say, they seem to be absolutely devoted. And at this time, you have an opportunity to thank God for devoted people, people who love you and people who care about you, as certainly this Joseph and Mary were given to care. So I suppose what I'm saying is, even if Bethlehem is in truth quite a bleak place, there is light in Bethlehem. There is good in Bethlehem. There are good people in Bethlehem. There are reasons to be thankful in this rather drab, little, unfriendly, busy, preoccupied, selfish city of Bethlehem, or so it seems. I know that at times I get overwhelmed by the challenges life throws my way. I get overwhelmed by all of these things. And when I'm overwhelmed by those things, I can forget the good. And it's so important, isn't it, to lift up your eyes and remember there are good things. Things to be thankful for. Things to remember. People like the shepherds and the donkeys. They're not in the Bible either. But it encourages you. People like this encourage you, don't they? In theology, we have a word. I hope I'm not speaking too long. We have a word, providence. Some of you know that word, providence. It's a very simple word. It simply means how God provides for people, the way God gives things to people. He gives you your situations in life. He gives you today. He gives you the people around you. That's part of God's providence, his plan for your life. And I suppose what I'm saying is that here, their providence, Joseph and Mary and Jesus' providence, was a hard providence in many ways. It was a tough call. It was a hard day. But there were good things going on that day too. And the danger is, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, when you're overwhelmed with the hardships, you can forget about the good. And when you're full of the good things, you can forget about the hardships. And we can get partitioned off. The truth is, life is a real odd mix, isn't it? There's good days, there's bad days, there's good things, there's bad things. And it's so important, isn't it, to remember. We've talked about the bad. It's good to remember the good too and keep some sense of balance in all of these things. Now, let me just say something to close. You see, here's a real danger with providence. Now, if you've had a difficult time, a difficult year, it's easy to say, God has not favored me. God doesn't like me. Maybe God doesn't even love me. And I know that he doesn't love me because of the hardships that I've faced in this experience. But on the other side, you could say, well, I'm doing fine. I've got a great job. My family's around me, everything. So God loves me. He shines upon me. And that's how I know where God stands in relation, how I stand in relationship to God. That is a very, very difficult road to take. Your understanding of how your relationship to God is going to go up and down as the circumstances of life are changing. If we go to Bethlehem, we see all the hardships in Bethlehem, and we see the good in Bethlehem. We still have to ask the question, what really is God doing? What's God doing in your life right now, in the good things and in the bad things? What is God doing? And the key word is the word redemption. Just an example. I made this one up. It didn't actually happen, but it would be nice if it did. Christmas time. There is a problem with drink driving at Christmas time. It's a lot better than it was, thankfully. But just envisage for a minute. There's a collision and two vehicles collide on the road. And both of these persons are hospitalized. They got whiplash and they've broken collarbones and back damaged sternum. And they're carted off to the A&E to be looked after. And there they are all bashed up, looking awful, feeling like God hates them and what a dreadful day and it's the night before Christmas and all the rest of it. But the two of them get talking. And as they get talking, one realizes the other one's got a really good sense of humor and a really good attitude. And the other one starts to appreciate this other person too, and they're a really good listener. And before you know it, the two of them start talking. They meet in the A&E ward. And lo and behold, this becomes their story of how they met. And they now have been married for 20 years. You know, some people marry and meet each other in strange circumstances. That would be redemption, wouldn't it? Something really, really good has come out of something really, really bad. And in Bethlehem, despite all the good and the ill that was going on there, mostly ill that was going on there, Jesus was born. Jesus was born in Bethlehem. In the midst of all of those different situations, Jesus was there. And the real thing is to know Jesus, isn't it? I've said the good, the bad, and the glorious, although it doesn't say that up on the screen. It's just a big blank blue square, right? But the word glorious should be there emblazoned on your minds. The glorious, glorious thing about Bethlehem is not the little blue houses and the little dome things or the twinkly lights or any of those sort of things. It's not the story of the cold-heartedness of the people of the city or even the kindness of the shepherds. The real story is that Jesus was there. Jesus was born in Bethlehem. And the wonderful thing about Jesus is, despite the hardships of his birth, Jesus was never bitter. He was never unforgiving. He was never graceless. He was never unkind. Jesus is love personified. God came down into our world and dwelt among us. And that is an amazing, amazing and glorious truth. In the middle of the ups and downs of our life, you can know and meet Jesus. You can meet the Son of God and know him for yourself, as those persons certainly did. In the midst of all those things, here came one ready to give his life. He came in order to give his life, not for wonderful people and kind people, but all the people of Bethlehem, sinners, cold-hearted people, selfish people, stubborn people, miserable people, you know, all the ordinary people that we know. Those are the kinds of people that Jesus gave his life for sinners. Because Jesus is the love of God manifest here in the world. And whatever you see in Bethlehem, you must see him. You must see him. I was talking to a guy, just to close, who got sent to prison. And he was involved in all sorts of drugs and all the rest of it. And he had a drug problem himself. And he spent some time in prison. And when they released him, they knew he had a drugs background. So they sent him straight to rehabilitation to try and help him clean up his life. And when he got there, there was a chap in the rehabilitation center who'd become a Christian. And this Christian was telling him, you've got to read this book. You've got to read this book. And every time, this guy was like one of these people just pops up at you everywhere you go. You've got to read this book. You've got to read this book. And he was a tough type and wasn't interested in reading that book, thank you very much. More, he was interested in the fact that he'd managed to stash some drugs inside the rehabilitation center, and he wanted to find an opportunity to take them, which he eventually did, was caught, was chucked out, back on the streets, arrested, back in prison again. And for those of you who've been in prison and know all about it, which I presume is the majority of you, you'll remember from your own experiences how you're, especially if you've got a drugs background, you're put in an isolation before you're released because they want to check whether you've brought any drugs into the prison, and they allow a certain period of time to make sure you're clean. And while he was in there, he was very, very bored. So he banged on the prison door, and the warden came and he said, what do you want? And he said, can I at least have something to read? I'm so bored in here. And the warden popped up and he said, I've got three books for you. You can choose one of them. And the first one he showed him was that book. He said at that moment, he just had this kind of, what is going on here? And it was a Christian book. And he realized that he'd come from there to there, dodging this book. And so he said, and he sat there in the cell and he read it. He came out the other end, he was a changed man. I saw him the other day. He was baptized 3 months ago. There was a smile on that man. And somebody was telling me that he is a rock of stability in the group that he's in at this particular time. That's a wonderful thing of redemption, isn't it? In the midst of his difficult circumstances, what a difficult life, he met Jesus. Christmas time, have you met Jesus? Do you know Jesus? If you know Jesus this Christmas, That's the realest and most important thing of all, isn't it? And if you don't get to know Jesus, he is the reason for the season. We haven't heard that expression for a while, have we? It's an oldie but a goodie. Well, we're going to sing something to close.